It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Crime Solvers and one of my favorite detective dramas, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, featuring Raymond Chandler's private eye, Philip Marlowe. Marlowe was a hard-boiled detective who wasn't afraid to do what he had to do to get things done. At one point during its run, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe was the top-running radio show in America. Enjoy.
We delay the start of our scheduled program to bring you a bulletin from CBS News. The Associated Press quotes an authoritative source in Tokyo as saying that some United States combat troops have been alerted to go into action in South Korea at a moment's notice. According to this authoritative source, the deteriorating military situation in Southern Korea may force the United States to commit ground forces to the battle. This bulletin came to you from CBS News. We now resume our scheduled program.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum are glad to bring you tonight's exciting story, The Pelican's Roost.
Hello, Marlowe speaking.
Oh, Phil, thank heaven you're home tonight.
Lynn?
Yes.
Lynn Russell?
Uh-huh.
Oh, baby, when did you get back to town?
Yesterday. Phil, listen, I'm at Eugene's. It's a beauty salon in Wilshire, just west of La Cienega.
Yeah?
Come over here right away, will you?
Me? To a beauty shop?
You've got to help me get out of here.
What's the matter, kid? Got your head caught in a dryer?
Phil, please, I'm serious. I'm scared. There's a guy waiting for me outside, and when I leave here, I'm afraid he's going to try to kill me.
Now, look, this isn't just for laughs, huh, baby?
Phil, this time I'm not fooling. This man's crazy. His name's Ward Erling. I had a few dates with him once. He was in an accident 3 months ago, just before I left on my cruise. He's supposed to be in the hospital right now, but he isn't. He's here, just waiting for me to leave.
Yeah, but Lynn,
look,
I'm
not asking a favor, Phil. I'm hiring you.
Okay, baby, it'll take me 15 minutes to get there.
Oh, thanks, Phil. I'll wait till I see you walk by.
I drove out to Wilshire Boulevard and kept telling myself that I could trust Lynn Russell. Why? Because I like her. She was a glossy brunette, born with all the natural equipment of a top model and a covey of oil wells in her own name. She rushed at life, but she'd always been smart enough to stop short of real trouble. Well, it was 9:30 when I got to the section of Wilshire's Miracle Mile that housed Eugene's beauty shop. I drove by, saw no one outside, so I pulled into an alleyway, parked, and walked back slowly. As I passed in front of the show window, I winked at a gilt mannequin with purple hair. And when I heard the door open behind me, I stopped and lit a cigarette. Lynn Russell hurried by without a word, ran to a cab at the corner, and drove away. Well, that was all there was to it. I turned around, headed back to my own car, and got as far as the handle on the door.
Oh!
I fell against the car as the blow came again.
Oh!
It made syrup of my legs. I oozed down onto the pavement and stayed there.
I know you. You're Marlowe, the private detective.
Okay. So I'm Marlowe.
Well, let me tell you something, Marlowe. I've spent 3 months flat on my back because of an accident that wasn't an accident. I'm going to get even with her, you understand? I don't care what it costs. Palmer Sloan or anybody else can hire a dozen like you, and it won't stop me, so stay out of my way.
climbed up my front fender hand over hand, got back on my feet. In time to clutch a glimpse of a new convertible emerald green with what must have been Ward Erling at the wheel. Well, it was no use trying to follow in the condition I was in, so I headed for Lynn's place with all my windows open. The cool air helped. I pulled up in front of a wrought iron arch labeled Garden Court Bungalows and followed a flagstone trail back to number 4, which was Lynn's. I felt almost normal again, until I saw her front door. It was standing half open, framing a man against the dark interior who was trying his best to see inside. This time, the advantage was mine, and I took it!
Take your hands off me!
Get inside!
Oh, just a minute!
Get in! Now turn on the lights. Lynn!
I doubt she's home. Miss Russell is not in the habit of sitting around in the dark.
Oh, you know her habits, huh?
I do. And you?
I know she has bad taste in men.
I wonder if I should resent that.
You don't qualify. What are you to Lynn?
When she wants someone to help her lift a martini glass, she calls on me. We've been going on like that for years.
Just tell me your name, Junior, and he's off on the small talk.
My name is Sloan, Palmer Sloan. Now it's your turn, Mr. Muscles.
Never mind. Lynn! Lynn!
By what right are you snooping around like this? Just who are you, anyway?
Here's my card. Lynn hired me tonight.
Oh. So you're Marlowe the detective?
Yeah, Marlowe the detective. Any idea where she is? It's important.
None whatever. I had a date to meet her here, which never means very much to her. Why did she think she would need you tonight?
Because she was afraid of a guy. One who gave me a crack on the skull, and incidentally, doesn't think much of you, either.
Oh?
Ward Erling. Ever hear of him?
Erling?
Yeah.
Well, yes. But Erling's still in the hospital. He met with an accident, you know. Something about brakes slipping on a car. And he was, he was crushed.
Accident's not what he calls it, and he's got a gun, just for emphasis. What's his connection with Lynn?
Oh, help yourself, Marlowe. Lynn won't mind.
Get your snoot out of that glass and answer me.
She discovered him. Like all the others. That sculptor 2 years ago. Then the cowboy, Tex Harrison. Early last year was the fellow with the racing boats, and so on. They are hobbies, fun and games to Lynn. She's got too much energy, far too much.
What's the difference with Ward Erling?
Well, he fell in love with her.
Oh.
It was charming. And then he wouldn't be brushed off, told off, or bought off. She tried them all.
So?
She left. Ran out, took a cruise. He wanted to marry her. Simply wouldn't take no for an answer. Imagine that. Those two belong together like scotch and kerosene.
You know, you sound a little like you're in love with her yourself.
Maybe I am.
Oh.
But I know my quaint little position in her life. I'm her errand boy, Marlowe. Nothing else.
And you don't care how dirty your hands get?
What do you mean?
Skip it. Now look, errand boy. Her life's in danger. Right now, I've got to find Ward Erling in a hurry. Any good ideas?
You might try the four-bell jump in Santa Monica.
What's that?
That's where Lynn dug that character up originally.
He's a musician?
If you want to call it that. Some do. He was the piano player and leader of a small and for some reason successful combination that's still there, so far as I know.
Yeah, and one more thing. Lynn left here in an awful hurry. She might be looking for you. And I might later, too. Now go home, wherever that is, and wait.
Why not? Oh, it's 210 in the Beekman Plaza.
210, huh?
And if my apartment doesn't answer, try the bar.
When I pulled onto the parking lot at the four-bell jump, the first thing I saw was the nose of the emerald green car Erling had been driving peeking out from the side of a building. I checked it and found out it was registered to one William Freeman. You know, that meant nothing, so my next stop had to be inside. The club was a low-ceiling mixture of dusty fishnets, the smell of bad bar whiskey, and noise. The band had just finished a set, climbed off the stand, and drifted out to join the customers. I saw the name Howdy Bub Freeman stenciled on the bass drum. He was a flyweight who carried most of it on an oversized head, equipped with a pair of protruding yellow eyes. Stuck out even further when I followed him out into a back room. Hey, Bub.
Yeah?
Is that your car around the side, the green one?
Yeah, brand new. Nice, huh?
Too nice to loan out.
Better come again.
Where's Ward Erling? I thought he was the piano man here.
Ward, he used to be. He's in the hospital now. Had a bad accident a while back.
Who says it was an accident?
Well, it was an accident. I say so. Of course it was. I saw it. The brake slipped in his car. It rolled down an incline, pinned him against the wall.
Is that so? Who says he's in the hospital?
I do. Hey, look, what's your grift?
You're a liar, Bub. Erling borrowed your car tonight.
Man, you're dragging me. I'll see you around.
Come back here!
Look, I got no beef with you, mister.
Where can I find Ward Erling?
Why don't you go off somewhere and drop dead?
Where is he? Come on, little man, before I shake it out of you. You look like you shake awful easy. Where's Erling?
Wait a minute. I don't know. I swear I don't. And I don't care if he used my car. I didn't know it. He's a bringdown, a spook.
Keep going.
He blew his cork over some society doll. It practically wrecked our combo we've been working 5 years to build up. Also, it broke the heart of one very sweet kid. Maxine's so gone, she'd scrub floors for Ward and he couldn't see it. I'm disgusted with him.
Maxine who? Where can I find her? Now look, little man, do I shake some more?
Maxine Magesta.
That's better.
She's inside at the end of the bar, blonde in a blue dress. Take it easy, will you? She's a good kid.
So am I. We'll get along fine. I'll see you, Bub.
And what'll it be for you, mister?
Scotch.
Oh, that one's taken. Lady will be right back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Water or soda?
Water.
Right. There you go.
Thanks.
Hey, Larry. Huh? Are your phone's broken? I didn't get my nickel back.
Oh, you want me to freshen up that drink, Maxine?
No, thanks, Larry. This is fine.
Maxine.
Yeah?
Maybe you can help me.
Maybe?
No. What I mean is I'm looking for Ward Erling.
Try under a rock.
You know, you sound a little bitter.
I'm as bitter as a slot machine these days. What's it to you?
Well, I'm an acquaintance of Lynn Russell's. Name's Marlowe. You know her, Maxine?
I've seen her at the jam sessions we used to go to. She used to show Ward off to her little groups like a prize pup.
Sure you got a peg right? You know she tried hard to shake
it. Listen, she's the Gottrocks type who'd sink a yacht just to watch the bubbles. And that's only...
Only what, Maxie?
Never mind, skip it. Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't I get to buy you a drink?
Some other Tuesday. Good night.
I watched her as far as the door. Decided to go after her, and then I caught the bartender giving me a very cold eye. Didn't thaw any, so I downed my drink and saw him high-sign the bouncer. Looked like my welcome was wearing thin, so I went outside, sat down in my car, and tried to figure out who was covering up what. But I only got as far down the list as Palmer Sloan. It had come from the back room in the club. I was a poor third in getting to him. A waiter in a white apron and a fat sax man both beat me.
Over here, Manny. Here.
Hey, it's Bub. Bub Freeman. Holy cats, what's wrong with him?
He's been stabbed.
Yeah, there. In his neck.
An ice pick. Bob, who did it?
No use, fella. He was gone before he hit the floor. Whoever did that to him got him dead center.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Pelican's Roost.
Howdy, Bub Freeman was face down and dead. The ice pick that had killed him pointed straight up, rigid like an accusing finger. To the right of the dead drummer's sprawled legs was the fat saxophone player, his face shiny with a fine sweat of fear. And to the left, the waiter who had found Freeman's body. For a backdrop, there was the doorway crammed with astonished faces and a funny kind of cracked voices people always have at a time like that. I closed them out. The waiter objected.
No, no, wait a minute, mister. What are you doing that for? We got to call the cops, sir. Hey, you ain't the cops, are you?
No, I'm a private detective. Name's Marlowe.
Well, that ain't good enough. We got to get the law
Shut
about
up,
this.
Dave.
What?
Mr. Marlowe will tell you anything you want to know. My name's Lager, Manny Lager. Bob Freeman was a good friend of mine.
Even if he's the reason Ward Erling went to the hospital?
What'd you say?
That from my corner, Freeman dead only adds one way. He put Ward Erling in splints to keep him from wrecking the band by running off with Lynn Russell on a 90-day cruise.
Oh, yeah, sure. And to get even, Erling put an ice pick in his neck. Tossed it right from his hospital window.
You don't keep up with the news, do you, Lager? Erling left the hospital this afternoon, probably
what?
By way of the fire escape.
Ward is out?
Out. And so that the accident was the kind that's planned well in advance. I know because we've already had a chat.
Then you mean that Erling did this to get square? He killed Freeman?
It could be. But there's another angle.
Yeah, an angle named Palmer Sloan. That society louse that didn't want his girlfriend mixed up with anything as degrading as a musician. That's it, ain't it?
Maybe. Erling was after Palmer Sloan, or Lynn Russell. He never mentioned Freeman.
Yeah, but where's the tie? Howdy Bub didn't fall on that ice pick. How does it figure?
Playing his sheet music. Was Bub and Palmer Sloan working together. Palmer knew that Erling was on the loose. He was afraid Bub would spill, so he quieted him with that. Right, Marlowe?
No, I think you're wrong. Both of you. Look here. I found this on the floor near the window. This wouldn't belong to a man, Mr. Marlowe. Not even the Palmer Sloan.
Let me see that. A mascara case.
Yeah.
Could be the very personal property of Lynn Russell.
Yeah. Her and a couple of million other dolls. You can't hang around that. Every gal carries mascara.
Hold it, will you, Lager? There's a trade name on this case. Eugene, Wilshire Boulevard, Beverly Hills.
So what does that prove?
May prove you wrong, Lager. I'll see you, boys. Marlowe Sloan, have you heard from Lynn?
No, Marlowe, I haven't, and I probably won't, so please let's not call here.
Save it for the country club, Palmer, and get a good grip on this. The drummer at the Four Bell Jump's been murdered. Looks like our not-so-sweet friend did it.
Lynn? Oh, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, I'm out of my mind. Now tell me, if she did this, have you any idea where she would head?
Well, no, Marlowe, no, I don't. No. The boat is tied up. Her car is in the garage for repairs.
Okay, suppose she didn't take a car or a boat. Would it be by... Hey, wait a minute, Sloan, what was that about a boat? Is it a yacht, maybe?
Not exactly, Marlowe. It's a cabin cruiser. Anchored off the Santa Monica Pier at the moment.
Santa Monica, Sloan, that fits. What's the name of it?
Crest of the Wave. Why? What makes you think she'd go out there?
Well, among other things, a crack a lady made earlier tonight. A lady named Maxine Majestu who loves Ward Erling and hates Lynn Russell. Bye-bye, Palmer. I made it to the fog-veiled Santa Monica Pier in less than 10 minutes. Then was another five getting out to the breakwater that joined the end at right angles to form a protecting L for the 50-yard boats moored within. Boats that ran from the kind of sleek yachts that good girls stay away from to a leaky rowboat with a rusted outboard labeled Faithless. And all were moored in a series of slips connected up front by a narrow, wet catwalk that did not have a guardrail. Except for a quiet old man with his pipe and pass, the end of the pier was deserted. No light showed on any of the boats. When I'd gone along the catwalk as far as the crest of the wave, a neat chrome-finished 50-footer, I had a clammy, uncomfortable feeling that said I was too late. But that disappeared in the next minute when I spotted Maxine Majesta standing alone on deck, her blonde hair damp and flat to a drawn, glistening face, a face that didn't brighten at the sight of me.
Marlowe, what do you want here?
Lynn Russell. Have you seen her, Maxie?
Lynn? No. No, I haven't.
But you are waiting for her.
No, why would I...
You mean you always come out here nights? It's good for a girl's hair, is that it, baby?
Marlowe, stay out of this, please.
So you can get to her alone?
No, Marlowe, so I can get to her alone.
What?
Don't budge an inch. I mean that, Marlowe. This thing goes off real easy.
Now, where is she, Maxine?
I don't know. Oh, Ward, I knew you'd come here after her. That's
Never
why...
Never mind that. I want Lynn Russell, Maxine.
Why? Why, darling? Oh, Ward, aren't you through with her yet? Didn't she do enough to you? She and that Palmer...
Stop it. Just tell me where she is. Keep those hands up, Marlowe.
I had an itch. I'll ask permission next time.
Ward, listen to me. What difference does it make where Lynn is? She doesn't love you. She never did. You were a 5-minute intermission. But us, we were different. We were in love, Ward. We had everything.
I'm only after one thing, Maxine. Now, where is she?
Ward, please forget her.
Come here.
In my arm.
I'm going to break it unless you tell me what I want to know. The guy who runs the hamburger joint on the other side of the pier saw her here, Maxine. And for the last time, where is she?
All right, stop it. She's at Pelican's Root.
Nice going, Adonis. You got your answer, didn't you?
Yeah. Just like I'm going to get Lynn Russell.
Hooray. State will be overjoyed.
What's that supposed to mean, Detective?
Something like Lynn Russell just killed Howdy Bob Freeman?
You're a liar.
Really?
It doesn't matter. If it's true, I'll just be a little harder on the fine lady.
How hard can you get, kid?
Hard enough. Ooh!
Bloody, come now. Here we go. Up to the sitting position. Too much blood to the head is bad now. Come, laddie, up we go. There we are. I'll be fine in a minute. Oh, there's quite the blow there.
Yeah. Hey, take that light out of my eyes, will you? Oh, who are you? Oh, yeah. I noticed you out on the pier earlier.
The name is Spoon, Elvin Spoon, but they call me Scotty.
That figures. Oh. Scotty, tell me, where's the Pelican's Roost? What is it, a nightclub or what?
A nightclub? Oh, no. It's far from that.
How far? What is it?
The Pelican's Roost is the old fishing pier.
In Santa Monica?
Eh?
A collection of rotting wood at the foot of 2nd Street?
Aye, but what business could a man have there, laddie?
The dirtiest. Thanks for your help, Scotty. Are you... Wait a minute.
What be it? Something you dropped?
Yeah. Something I dropped while being dropped. A mascara case I never really looked at before.
Laddie, you seem so puzzled.
Not puzzled, Scotty, just dumb. Laddie here has been jumping to the wrong conclusions, and all because he didn't take a good look at this and...
And what?
And the color of a girl's hair. So long, Scotty. Thanks again for your help. May get me to the Pelican's Roost on time. The nickname for the cockeyed assortment of barnacled pilings that complained with every surge of the sea and complained again with the undertow that always followed was no misnomer. At least 1,000 sleeping pelicans called it home. And now as I moved out along the splintered, lopsided boards that here and there gave way, I tried to be careful not to wake too many of the birds and stir them to flight, because that would give me away. But the heavy, clinging fog and the waves crashing over the jagged, jutting rocks below were on my side. I made it out to within 20 yards of the end of the pier without being seen. There I slipped my .38 out of my shoulder holster and went forward, a slow foot at a time, until I saw Lynn Russell. Alive and alone, huddled near a slick, oily piling, her face in her hands, her body trembling with her tears. What I didn't see was the man who would come up beside me and take an aim.
Oh,
my hand! How dumb can one man get, Marlowe? A beating on the sidewalk, a beating on a boat, and now this.
Third time's a charm, Adonis, haven't you heard?
Feel your hand. It must hurt terribly.
Don't waste your sympathy, Lynn. The gentleman here thinks you're a killer. He thinks you knocked off Howdy Bub Freeman because you and Bub planned my accident, and you were worried about Bub talking too much.
Phil, how could you believe that?
Oh, it was real easy, Lynn. You had the motive, and that plus a box of mascara that came from your beauty shop just about sold me.
I don't understand. What about the mascara?
Well, it was found near Freeman's body. But it wasn't until a few minutes ago that I found something else. The mascara is brown, and that fits a blonde, not a brunette.
What are you trying to say, Marlowe?
My guess is that Maxine Magesta is that blonde. She happens to use the same brand as you, Lynn.
It's a good guess, Marlowe.
Maxine.
Swell guess. I did kill Bub. We both planned your accident, Ward. Bud, because he didn't want you to ruin everything you two worked so hard for, and I because I'd rather have you in the hospital than with her.
Stay back, Maxine. He has a gun.
So do I, but I'm still a hit. You see, Marlowe, I got here before you did. I've been watching them. He had all the chance in the world to shoot, but he didn't, and he won't. And that's why you only got shot in the hand. He's not a killer. You only had the killer's temper. And he's just learned that revenge is hollow unless you are a killer.
Don't, Maxine!
No, shut up, both of you!
You killed Bob.
Yes, I did. He was afraid you'd find out everything. He thought his only chance was to tell you what we did and put the blame heavy on me.
You scum. You put me in the hospital, nearly killed me, just to keep me for yourself.
Yeah. It's called love. Stupid, wasn't I, Ward? Selfish. And I lost. But if I can't have you, nobody...
She hit those rocks. We got to get her.
Not a chance. Wouldn't do any good if we did. Give me that gun, Erling.
Marlo, I...
Never mind the speech. Go on back to the hospital. Get out of here.
Yes. All right, Marlo.
It was midnight when I called the Santa Monica police, and when all the paperwork was done, it was 3 in the a.m. Lynn and I drove by the old pier and sat looking at the rotten timbers. Tried not to talk about the poor kids somewhere underneath them. Lynn.
Yes, Phil.
How do you feel about everything?
I don't. Just numb.
Maybe that's the best way. Numb. Anesthetized. Insulate our hearts, our sensibilities. That way nothing can get to you. Yeah. Then just as we think we're all snug in cotton wool, life explodes the insulation, the heart ends the anesthesia, and we're back grabbing at brass rings.
Phil, I want to go home.
Okay, kid. But remember... there may not always be a way home.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, presented by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, bring you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and star, Gerald Moore. Philip Marlowe is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Lillian Bieff, Larry Dobkin, Georgia Ellis, John Daner, David Ellis, Paul Dubov, and Jack Crucian. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's adventure of Philip Marlowe and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time it was a big city, dirty from a trigger-fisted thug in yellow suede shoes. A lady's heart dropped in the gutter and a corpse in a Hollywood duplex. But in the middle of it all and setting the pace was a sweet little girl from Pumpkin Center, Kansas.
This is Bob Stevenson speaking, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Yep. Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum are glad to bring you tonight's exciting story, The Girl from Pitchfork Corners.
Sure, what I'm saying. Do I look like I'm wearing blinkers? Now, for the third and last time, so I can go back to marking this form. Nobody's been in that seat, mister, since we left L.A. Nobody. You sure you got the right stall?
Yeah. Car J lower 12. Your J upper 12, right?
Right. Like rain. Well, that's life
now, look,
for you.
Now, look, friend, let's go around again. Huh? His name is Latimer, Arnold Latimer. I don't know what he looks like, but he's supposed to be heading for San Francisco. Now, maybe you heard somebody call him, page him, something.
Nobody called no one except that pool cue conductor with the brass buttons and the sandpaper voice. You checked him?
Yeah, twice. Now, look, lower 12 is vacant as far as he's concerned, right? And no Arnold Lattimore in the club car, the diner either?
Hey, now, wait a minute. Have you tried the washroom?
Yeah, same story.
Well, looks like your entry was scratched. That's scratched.
Also looks like Glendale is where I get off. So long, pal. Good luck with the ponies.
Hey, now, hold it. Don't tell me that Latimer bird is the only reason you're on this train.
One and only. Look, if you run across a pony called Not On Hand, play it heavy, huh?
Yeah, sure. But not
the show.
Not the show.
Good night, friend. I waited on the platform at Glendale until the chrome streamliner had glided out with car J, lower 12, still empty. Then I got a cab back to Union Station in L.A., picked up my own car and headed for 1312 North Bronson Drive in Hollywood, and a woman I'd never seen named Donna Rollins. She had hired me by special delivery letter that afternoon, crisp $50 bill enclosed therein, to be sure that one Arnold Latimer was going where he'd said he was going. That had been my job. Well, the place on Bronson was the kind of imitation Mount Vernon architecture where Washington couldn't have slept a wink. The lady that answered the door was about as colonial as Bebop. Yet she was a full lap behind the other extreme, known as glamorous Hollywood type. Just a nice-looking anybody, with freckles, brown hair in a soft bun, and dressed in a white blouse that didn't plunge an inch.
Yes? What is it?
Oh, I'm Philip Marlowe, Miss Rollins. I'm afraid you're entitled to some change. May I come in?
Change? What do you mean, change?
You're $50. It's a lot of money for a one-line report on a little man who wasn't there. Miss Rollins, do you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Marlowe. I don't like to seem abrupt, but I'm very busy. Excuse me, please.
You seem to have lost interest in Mr. Latimer in a hurry. You know, when you sent me the letter this afternoon...
Please, Mr. Marlowe, there isn't time for talk. I've already told you I'm very busy. Good night.
Okay, baby. Good night it is. I backed my nose off the front door knocker, chalked Donna Rollins off as another woman who had changed her jittery mind, and walked a dozen yards back to where I'd parked my car. The crisp $50 bill was still burning a hole in my pocket. When I was in behind the wheel, I was still worried about taking so much for so little. Until I flicked my headlights on and the slash of white picked up something I hadn't expected. Donna Rollins, a coat thrown over her arm, her face stamped with fear, was running away from the house like it was going to blow up, headed for a taxicab parked close to a corner. I started my car to follow her, but I never made it, because a hot rod decided all at once to park in front of me. The adolescent climbed over his door and came toward me. He was strictly brash high school sophomore with dialogue to match. Of course, the cab was gone.
Well, Pappy, nice going. Your bumper's pleated my twin pipes. Well, what do you calculate doing about it?
If you were 5 years older and 5 inches taller, I'd pleat you, Pappy. Now, come here!
Oh, hey, let me go!
Not until I speak my piece. You, sonny, you're going to get those two cars apart in less than 2 minutes because I don't calculate on being gone any longer. Is that crystal clear?
Yeah, sure, mister. Sure, I'll fix it up double quick. You'll see. I practically got it done now. Okay?
I don't know. We'll talk about it again in 2 minutes. I had no idea what Donna Rollins had been running to or from. But the fact that she was gone while her front door was still open made her house the first place to check. I found the living room nothing more or less than I'd seen at my first peek. Plush, but empty. The bedroom beyond was the same. White satin drapes spilling onto a wall-to-wall jet black hook rug, and on the far side of the room, sprawled over an also white ottoman, a very beautiful blonde girl, very dead. She'd been shot twice in the back sometime in the last hour. There was no identification in any of the pockets of the expensively tailored gabardine suit that she wore. In a handbag, the story was the same. Yeah, it looked like Donna had had good reason to run, but that I had a better one for calling the police. Or taking her messages. Hello?
I want to talk to Donna.
She isn't in. Message?
Yeah, he has a message. I want you to find her and get her this to me, please.
Hey! Hey, I can't hear you. Are you still there?
Yeah. Now, hold on. His phone booth leaked. Okay. Who are you?
Friend of Donna's. You said you had a message.
Yeah, so I did.
But?
But I think you're awful anxious, fella. Too anxious.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Don't get touchy. I'm a friend, all
right. Skip it, friend.
Ah. Not a chance, Junior. Nevins, 1212. We may get together yet.
Los Angeles City Building. Fire department.
Battalion Chief Kegler, please.
1 moment, sir.
All right.
Battalion Chief.
Phil Marlowe, Keg.
Oh, hi, Phil.
Look, can you get me some dope in a big hurry? It's important.
Oh, sure, Phil. Name it.
What firehouse went out on a call less than a minute ago? Can you look it up?
Well, I don't have to. It's here on the board in front of me. Engine Company 5, Phil, San Fernando Valley. But it's only a small brush.
I don't care about that, Keg. Where does Engine Company 5 live? Where in the valley? Can you give me that?
Well, I think so, Phil. Seeing it was me own outfit for 14 years. The corner of Ventura Boulevard and Whitsitt. But, Phil, what do you want to...
I'll call you later, Chief. We'll talk it over then, huh? Thanks. Goodbye. I was playing a long shot. But any kind of a lead on a deep freeze voice who had a message for a girl who left a corpse in a bedroom was worth checking. So for the time being, I skipped calling the police and left the place lights out, door closed but not locked. Then I found my car where the hot rod pilot had left it. Started for the San Fernando Valley in the firehouse called 5. Later, when I was there and out of my car, I came face to face with my second break. The only payphone within a half block of the engine company was at an all-night open-air hot dog stand. And the attendant on hand, a girl with a kind of arched eyebrows that left her looking constantly surprised, had an A1 memory.
I most certainly do remember the party you're talking of, mister, most certainly, and for two especially good reasons.
Like what, honey?
Like top and bottom, hair and shoes I refer to.
Oh.
The former, red, like this ketchup here, and the latter, suede and yellow, no less, and
hey,
he was
Bessie.
The... Yeah, excuse me.
Yes, sure.
Well, let's be quick.
Hot dogs, Bessie. You pick it with your own dainty fingers.
Yeah, with my own dainty fingers. Really, Chris, you say the same thing every night. It gets to be very...
Bessie... Bessie, pardon me, dear, but this counts. Do you know who this redhead in yellow suede shoes is? His name?
Oh, no, I never saw him before.
Oh, fine. Well, thanks, baby.
Well, don't mention it. By the by, I do know where he went, if that means anything.
Baby, it means a lot. Where? Tell me.
With the Old Mexico Club here in Studio City. He works there or something. Anyhow, I know he made a call to Herbert Ring, the gambling big shot, and called him boss. And Ring runs that place.
Thanks, sweetheart. So here's 10 for your trouble. Bye, Chris, and you old hat.
Thanks.
Goodbye. Mexico Club was phony south of the border. From authentic Latin American rumba team, I'd seen billed as Mr. and Mrs. Buck and Wing a month ago at the policeman's ball, to a life-size painting of a bullfighter who had his cape thrown over the wrong shoulder. It was strictly second-rate, all the way down and back up the line to the proprietor himself, Herbert Ring, an almost smooth, almost big bookmaker whom I knew slightly. I found him at a corner table, huddled over a glass of milk, listening hard to none other than the redhead with the gaily colored feet. When I stepped up to them, the conversation broke off sharply.
Well, well, well. Hi, Phil. What's new, boy?
Oh, nothing much, Herb. Outside of a job I just landed. A girl named Donna Rollins.
Donna Rollins.
Quiet, Larry. Excuse us, won't you? Sit down, Phil, sit down. Mr. Marlowe, Larry.
How are you?
I'll be at the bar, boss.
He's not so friendly, Phil. The evasive type, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Evasive like Arnold Latimer, maybe?
Arnold La... Who's that, Phil?
Now, listen, Herb, I'm trying it straight. Donna Rollins and you, what's the tie?
I forget. Your angle?
Right now, curiosity and a corpse, no more.
Oh, somebody's dead, huh? Where?
I forget. Round two, Herbie.
Yeah. Okay, Phil, you got as much good sense as you have nerve.
Thanks.
I'll try it straight for a while. A certain party has me over the barrel. Tonight's the payoff. I plan on making it. That's all.
Blackmail? And you're almost happy about it? Ho-ho. Now, look, Herb, you don't expect me...
Marlowe, you're thinking like an honest man. Now, turn it over.
Huh?
I'm stuck, so I pay. Once. Blackmail's your name for it. We call it smart money. And smart money's what we deal in. You follow?
Almost. But this certain party, is it Donna Rollins?
Marlowe, after what I said about your good sense...
Oh, yeah. How straight can you get, huh?
Leave it alone, Phil. Good night, boy.
I watched them go as far as the bar and past Larry, who quietly fell in step behind without so much as the command heel. And when they both disappeared into a door marked private, I decided I'd had enough of Old Mexico. I got out to my car and pointed it back for Donna Rollins' place for the only reason left. I didn't know where else to go. Half hour later, when I was there, I was glad it had played that way because number 1312 North Bronson was not dark as I'd left it, but lights on, front door wide open, radio going, and for a topper... A gentleman of maybe 35, in tweeds and a sunburn, mixing himself a drink. The evening paper open on a nearby coffee table.
What?
Good evening.
Oh, you startled me. You a friend of Donna's?
Yeah, yeah. She in?
No, she... Say, who are you? You barge in here, close the door, make yourself...
I told you, I'm a friend of Donna's.
Oh, that's odd. So am I. A steady boyfriend. Shall we try again?
All right, the name's Marlowe. I'm a private detective working for Donna.
Well, Donna hired a private detective. Why? What's wrong?
Take it easy. Mr.
Sattler, Doug Sattler. Now, please, now, Mr. Marlowe, come to the point. I had a date with Donna.
Yeah, well, from the way she left here, I don't think she's going to keep it.
Why not? Why shouldn't she?
Well, for one thing, if you don't know already, there's a body in the bedroom there.
But somebody's dead in there?
Yeah, very dead. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look, huh? Maybe somebody you can identify. It's a woman, Mr. Sattler, a blonde. She was shot. Well, who is it, Sattler? Friend of Donna?
Oh. It's Donna.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Girl from Pitchfork Corners.
In the bedroom was no prettier than it had been when I'd first found it, only now it had a name.
Donna
Rawlins, my client.
Donna.
And as Doug Sattler stared at it and repeated the name, his long hands began to twist each other and his forehead got sticky. I finally took him by the shoulder and turned him around, away from it. His glistening gray eyes avoided me and instead darted at the corners of the room frantically like a pair of scared mice looking for a place to hide.
Donna dead like that? I just can't get it through my head. Why?
Well, let's try the easy ones first. Like who, huh?
You mean you know who did this?
Yeah, it's not exactly the handcuff stage, Sattler, but I got a prospect. Come on, let's go in the other room. You can probably use a brace.
Yeah, thanks. I need a drink.
Yeah, I think it's a girl. A cute one with dark eyes and a double row of freckles across her nose.
Freckles?
Yeah. Also, she has brown hair and a bun and a mouth that probably liked to smile once. I wasn't doing much of that when I reported to her tonight.
You reported to her. Now, wait a minute. That's impossible, Marlowe.
Why? She was right here in the apartment. Furthermore, she said she was Donna Rawlins.
I can't understand this, any of it.
Hey, wait a minute. Take it easy with that stuff. I said a brace, not a bottle.
I need it. You see, I know the girl you've just described.
Hmm?
Her name's Beverly Cheskin.
Cheskin? And a reason for killing, if she didn't?
Jealousy.
Maybe you better draw me a picture.
She's a crazy, unreasonable kid from the sticks, Marlowe. From Pitchfork Corners, Kansas.
From where?
That's right, Pitchfork Corners.
Oh.
The rest of it's just as fantastic.
Well, what's the rest of the story?
Last summer, my car broke down. I was stuck there for a week.
Mm.
She worked in the only drugstore in town. I was just about the first guy she'd ever seen in something beside a straw hat and overalls. She fell for me, and, well, I kind of let her on. You know how a fellow will.
I should. I've been hearing the same story since I was in the third grade.
It's the truth.
Oh, sure, sure. Rest of it, no doubt, goes right down the same cob. From sweet nothings to love letters sealed with a kiss. When you finally got around to breaking it to her gently about Donna, she wouldn't believe you, and before you knew it, she dropped everything, came to the big city, huh?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
You make it all sound pretty silly.
It's no sillier to me than that corpse in there.
Okay. It's hard to believe she'd actually commit a murder, Marlowe. She does have a temper.
And she's just pulled her life out by the roots. And you know what? They grow deep in places like Pitchfork Corners, city boy. Or didn't you care?
Of course I did. Crazy little fool. I tried to reason with her in my letters,
Never mind. Let's get on to the sophisticated part, huh? About Donna and one Mr. Latimer, for instance.
Latimer? Who's that?
Oh. How about Donna and Herbert Ring?
I don't know any Herbert Ring either.
Mm-hmm.
But Donna had a lot of business friends I didn't bother with. Why?
Well, you should have. Doing business with Herb Ring means...
Means what?
That you have to be fast on your feet.
What's that? What'd you pick up off the floor, Marlowe?
An old envelope. I'm a stickler for neatness. Where's Beverly staying, Sadler?
I don't know. She called me once, but she wouldn't tell me. I haven't seen her.
Where'd she reach you?
My hotel, the Greenwood Arms.
Mm-hmm.
Marlowe, what are we going to do? About Beverly, I mean.
Right now, I'm going to try to find her. If you can stand it, Sattler, stay here. And stay sober. The crumpled envelope I'd found that didn't belong on Donna's floor had come from the Sunflower Motor Court. Qualified as a lead only because the name might appeal to a sentimental Kansan a long way from home. Well, it took the night man at the place 5 fumbling minutes to discover that Beverly Cheskin actually was registered. 5 more to remember that she'd got a call just before I showed up. Had left in a big hurry and had crossed the street towards Sam's, which was a U-drive car lot done in tired green. So was Sam.
Sorry, Sonny, but you're out of luck. Ain't a buggy left on the lot. Them two out there laid up.
I don't want a car, Sam. I got my own across the street. I'm looking for a girl.
What you doing it in here for?
Because her name is Beverly Cheskin.
Beverly? Well, say now. Ain't this a coincidence?
Is it?
Pretty little thing by that name we just seen. Freckles and all.
Hmm.
Don't see Freckles out here much. Made me kind of homesick.
Yeah, I bet. Did she rent a car from you?
Oh, sure did. Brand new Nash, last one.
Oh?
Darn near didn't give it to her. She's mighty keyed up, you see. Figured the L.A. traffic had put the wild on her till I found out it was love.
Love? What do you mean?
Why, she asked me what was the shortest way up to Vista Point. Won't you get it, son?
I'll be very honest, not yet, no.
Well, Vista's Mexican for view,
oh.
Senor. Point's just a hoot and holler east of the observatory. See the whole darn valley and all of L.A. from up there.
Oh, that's where she's headed, huh? You sure?
Well, I reckon. Most romantic spot around. Dangerous road, though, more ways than one. But you ain't kidding me. I'll let you know all about it.
Well, not all, but I'm willing to find out. Thanks, Sammy.
That's all right. Don't break your neck across the street, son, as you wait.
Leave that heap right where it sits, Thomas. We won't be needing it.
I won't take your word for it, Larry.
You better. Mr. Ring wants you and me to have a nice talk.
Tell him we have nothing in common.
He knows different. The name Arnold Latimer, for instance.
Sorry, some other time. I got a date.
Come here, you. Said we're going to talk, Mr. Cool Cucumber. If I have to warm you up to it the hard way, it's okay with me.
You know, Larry, there's something wrong with a guy who'll wear yellow suede shoes like those. He must be slow in his reflexes. Imagine I'll be seeing you. As I headed for Vista Point, two ugly facts stood out clearly. First, the only person Beverly Cheskin would rush off to Vista Point for was Doug Sattler. Second, he had to be a liar because he called her just as soon as my back was turned. And they both added up to the same thing, another corpse. The road up from the valley floor was a narrow strip of crumbling concrete as full of twists as a hurt worm. But near the top, it leveled off in a series of ragged terraces, grossly overrated as a lover's rendezvous. I pulled off the road, hid my car near a scrub oak, and went the rest of the way up on foot. A cold wind lashed at the manzanita as I worked my way up to the crest. The half moon played unpredictable tag with low clouds. So I followed the shadow of a stone wall out onto the jutting point, where the mountain fell away on three sides into a black gorge. Finally, I spotted them. Doug Sattler and the freckled kid from Pitchfork Corners,
Beverly,
standing close together
at
the edge of oblivion.
I was in love with you, Doug. I still am. Doesn't my being here prove that? When you called me at the motel, I came up here as fast as I could, even though I knew what you'd done. Oh, Doug, why did you have to kill her? Why?
Because she double-crossed me on a business deal. A blackmail deal, Beverly.
Blackmail?
That's right. Donna knew plenty about certain men in this town, big-timers who'd pay thousands or kill to keep others from finding out about them.
Oh, Doug, how could you?
Well, it was risky. I had to pose as somebody who didn't exist, a Mr. Arnold Latimer, and pretend that he was the one who had all the information. I demanded 50 grand from a guy named Ring and set Donna up as the go-between. Then, as Latimer, I was supposed to go to San Francisco on the train and wait for Donna to come with the money. But I'd have waited the rest of my life. She intended to keep it all for herself.
But you killed her, Doug. Was it that important to you?
You still don't get it, do you?
I know now that there's no chance for us, for you and me. No chance at all, ever.
I'm going through with the deal alone, Beverly. I'm going to get that money. But I've got to do something else first.
I'd heard enough.
You don't really think
I reached
for
my 38 and edged along the wall toward them to where I knew I couldn't miss.
I made a mistake, Beverly. I dropped an envelope in Donna's place and Marlowe found it. He knows I lied, but I can still say I did it to protect you.
Protect me? What do you mean?
He'll be up here eventually, but all he's going to find is a stupid kid from Pitchfork Corners murdered a rival in a bit of jealousy and then couldn't face it. And came
I was counting on the wind to cover any noise, and it did.
You see, it was a...
That's why I was caught flat-footed when the shock came. Sattler lurched up on his toes and doubled over, clawing at his stomach. I crouched down as Herbert Ring stepped out of the brush across the clearing, a thin-barreled gun in his hand.
Don't move, sister!
Sattler had fallen face down on the ground. I started moving again as Ring rolled him over with his foot. He was dead.
That's the only payoff Mr. Arnold Latimer gets for me. It's too bad you had to be here to see it made, sister, because I can't afford a witness. I'm sorry, I really am. But it's no worse than he was going to do to you.
Ring! Duck Beverly!
Let that gun lay, Ring. Don't reach for it. Just relax.
Larry, that louse. He was supposed to...
Yeah, it's a little late for tips, Herb. You should have hired a better class of help.
Go fry your head. Nobody's perfect. Even you.
Yeah, where'd I slip? Too much volume when I talked to Sam?
Yeah, that's right, Bob. I tagged you there and listened.
So you knew where to come and you heard the rest of it up here just like I did. You take it, Herb? It's not going to be easy getting it down this hill to a dock.
Are you kidding, Shamus? I ain't moving any place. If you know any pretty words, go say them to the lady. She's the one who needs them. They'll go over big in pitchfork.
Think of any pretty words. Not then, anyway. I let her figure it all out for herself, and she was still at it when we got to police headquarters, where we told the whole story to homicide from start to finish. And finally, when a coroner's crew went up to Vista Point to take Sattler and Ring to the morgue, and a gaunt police secretary with calluses on her mind hammered out the reports, I went over to Beverly, the little country girl, who was looking through a dingy window at the dingy backyard of a city.
Are they going to ask any more questions, Mr. Marlowe?
No new ones. They've got it all. They just like to repeat to be sure it comes out the same each time. You can't blame them, you know. Well, they're not going to hold you. You can leave tomorrow and go home.
Yes, I know, but I'm not going back. I'm going to stay here in Los Angeles.
Be sure, baby. It's a big place, lots of people. Awful lot of people.
Not if you think about them one at a time.
Yeah.
You can go now if you want. But we'd like to talk to you again, Miss Chesson. Will you come in, please?
Oh, yes, sir. Well, good night, Phil. Can I call you one of these days?
You better. Starting tomorrow. Smiled, and the freckles on her nose all ran together. Yeah, it was a lovely sight, that nose. I watched her walk into the lieutenant's office, and then I went out, got in my car, and headed home. And as I drove, I thought about hepcats, hicks, and hayseeds. But as she suggested, one at a time. You know what? It worked. That way there's no difference. They're all people. Yeah, I had a hunch I was going to be planning on that phone call tomorrow.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, presented by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, bring you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and star, Gerald Moore. Philip Marlowe is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Sammy Hill, Peter Leeds, Wally Mayer, Hugh Thomas, Anthony Barrett, Vivi Janis, and Harry Bartell. Special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's adventures of Philip Marlowe and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I spent the night in an ancient Spanish castle with an overworked count guarding a tomb. A caretaker with blood on his mind and a seven-footer called Peter the Cruel, which was one thing. The other was worse. They all lived in the 16th century.
Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road.
Thanks for joining us for the adventures of Philip Marlowe. We always appreciate reviews, and we appreciate Spotify comments. Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Crime Solvers. This is your host, John Hagedorn, and we'll be back soon.